Okay, let's call tonight the school meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission to order. Can we have a roll call, please?
Keel.
Here.
Barnwell.
Here.
Merkin.
Here.
Miller.
Here.
Smith.
Here.
Cale.
Here.
Are there any changes or additions to the agenda tonight?
I would like to make a suggestion.
Sure.
That we move the CCC public meeting to the left. We explain the fact that the CCC doesn't get a whole lot longer than the others.
I'll second that.
I agree with that. Okay. All in favor of the modification? Aye.
Aye.
All vote? All right, we will move CCC plan. The end of new business. Are there any changes or additions to the minutes from April 6th?
No.
Getting out of the minutes will stand approved. Public comments. This is a time for members of the public to offer comments on matters that are not scheduled to be heard by the Planning Commission tonight. Are there any comments from the public? Okay. Then we're on new business. We will start with CUP 0216, St. Peter and Paul Catholic Church. We'll start with staff report.
Okay. The conditional use permit request from the St. Peter and Paul Catholic Church. It's an addition, which will be on the west and the north side of the church. We've got some photos to show you. The applicant is Mark Thiessen, Anglo Architectural Associates, LLC. They're located at 12314 Ridge View Drive, Urbandale, Iowa. Church is located at 14238 500th Avenue in Gilbert. This is a vicinity map. This is in Lafayette Township. It's between 140th to the north and 150th Street to the south. It's on the east side of 500th Avenue. It's also on the Boone County and Surrey County line. Boone County and Surrey County. 2015 aerial. Subject property is about 8.43 acres. Most of the buildings, however, and the parking area is in the northern portion of that 8.5-acre area. A little closer view, the gravel, or actually the church, is located right here. Again, they're proposing addition on the west side and the north side of the church. You see the gravel parking area to the north side. There's a couple of buildings used for the church activities, educational meetings. There's also a residence to the south and a couple of outbuildings. This is the aerial from 2003. It shows you again the expansion of the parking that has taken place from that period of time to the current period of time. The county does have a 5-foot setback requirement from common property lines to allow for a green space area. Again, you can kind of see that that they've actually expanded it to that northern property line. So that's part of one of the conditions that we have, that we'll work with them to remove that area to the north, south, at least 5 feet to get that green space in there. Adjacent properties, there is a residence located to the north. There's one to the west in Boone County. Just to give you an idea, the purple line represents the east right-of-way line of 500th Avenue. It's also the west property line. The house to the north is approximately 12 feet from that front property line, but it's about 58 feet to that common north property line of the church. The residence across the street is about 86 feet to the north property line. The church is approximately 20 feet. If you include the overhang canopy to that west front property line. The church was built in 1917. So it's considered non-conforming to the current 50-foot setback. This is their first construction drawing. Again, this is from Anglo Architectural Associates. Everything that's crosshatched there represents area of the addition. But again, the west edge of the addition would line up with the west edge of that walkway canopy, which is permitted under the county development requirements. And then, of course, they're showing the addition on the north side as well. The existing footprint of the church is shown in white. Elevation drawings, the top one is the west elevation. The south photo or drawing is the east elevation. This one, the north, the top one is the north elevation. Part of what they're going to do is pretty cool. There's a bell that the church has had for a number of years. It's a part of a separate structure that was located south and west of the church. They're going to actually use that, incorporate that into the design. Mark, the architect, is here, and he can talk a little bit about that. Here's a layout view that shows the upper level of what's proposed. This would be the lower level, upper balcony area. Again, part of this project is going to be phased over the next 5 to 10 years, but again, they're asking for the conditional use permit today. Photo, this is the front of the church. This is the west wall. You can see that covered canopy. Again, it extended out about 16 feet approximately, and it was about 20 feet from that front property line. There's looking to the north. There's about 4 feet, 4.5 feet from the grade to the lower area of that entrance into the door. Part of the plan includes removing the walkway, removing the steps that are elevated to the church. The door's going to be gone. Part of the concern that the county had was there was a period of time where there was parking occurring within the road right-of-way. And so this will shift the parking. Through this new design, they're going to have the new entrance on the north side of the building. And so the focus will be that the north side will be where all the people will access the church. These two buildings are for classrooms, for study. This house, I believe, is being rented. This is across the street. Again, that house is about 86 feet from the property line. Looking north, that's 500. You can see the house to the north. That's directly north of this parcel. Agricultural land to the east, for the most part to the east and south, is ag ground. You see the two accesses. Part of what we're suggesting for traffic circulation for safety is to have the entrances, access points signed, one for entrance, one for exit, to help with circulation, and it'll also help for the motoring public on 500. They were looking at the parking area. This part of that structure that was removed, that's where the bell is located, attached to that. This is the east side of the church, and we're looking at part of the parking area. We're looking to the south from the parking. We're into the staff report, looking at compatibility of the use and the proposed improvement with the site and surrounding properties. The church has been here for 99 years. Again, it was constructed in 1917, so it's been there a long time. It's a good chance that the property owners that are going to be most affected to the north and west are accustomed to the activity that goes on at the church here. Most affected are going to be those two residences of this project. The dwelling to the north does share the access with the church. Again, we're recommending traffic signs to help alleviate with the circulation. And then we mentioned that the north edge of that parking needs to be reduced to the south to meet that 5-foot green space requirement. transition, green space surrounds the church building. It's grassy area for the most part. There are large agricultural parcels to the east and south. The dwelling located to the north again is about 58 feet from that common north property line. The applicant has provided a landscape plan, and they do plan to meet the county's landscaping requirements. Traffic, for the most part, currently they've got about 210 parishioners. They can figure 2.5 persons per vehicle. We'd come to about 84 vehicles. With the project that's proposed, they're thinking they're going to have approximately 252 people with an upward threshold for like funerals and weddings, larger events, up to around 299, which is what the septic system's being designed for. So overall, there'll be a slight increase in traffic, but we did look at like the traffic from the DOT for 2011, 2007, 2003, and for the most part, there's much more traffic on that highway than there would be for like a single event, a single service at the church. So that's what we're noting there. In general, the road currently has 8.5 times more average daily traffic than like a single service activity at the church. Parking and loading, the north side of the building will become the main entrance, which we're viewing that as a good thing. Previously, we were parking on the west side in the right-of-way. We've got space for about 100 vehicles. Again, we're suggesting that they install entrance and exit signs to assist with traffic control. There's no lighting planned or signage planned for this project. Environmental protection, applicants indicated that the project will meet Iowa stormwater management practices and erosion control measures, which are identified in the county's development regulations. The proposed septic system, again, is designed to accommodate 299 parishioners. The property is not located within the floodplain. We did send out information to the various departments, and for the most part, the comments that the engineering division made have been addressed. There was documents going back and forth through this review process. Ultimately, health department is satisfied with what is being showed with the proposed septic system. We did send notices out to the property owners within a quarter of a mile. April 22, we did not receive any comments back. No phone calls. Nobody stopped in. The staff recommendation is to approve it with the five conditions that you see. One deals with the landscaping. Again, they did submit a landscape plan to address that. Two, we're suggesting that they have a paved route, part of the ADA guidelines, from the parking to the entrance, which is going to be, again, on the north side. The goal would be to issue the subject to this being approved, to issue the preliminary zoning permit, and then work with them to get the improvement installed, and then at that time issue the final. Three, the applicant should provide a minimum of the 5 feet of green space. And four, the signing, which we talked about, the circulation, and then not to allow parking on the west side of the building. So that brings us to the alternatives. Staff is recommending that you support number two, which is to approve it with those conditions, and then ask us to get this on the agenda for the Board of Adjustments May 18th meeting. With that, I'd be happy to answer the question.
I'm going to assume that the new entrance on the north side will be handicap accessible.
It's all one level.
So
no more stuff.
No steps. Right. So definitely we'll have accessible entrance.
Right.
I think what we're doing is accessibility, but it didn't stay on.
Yeah.
You mentioned in your report the preservation of forest trees, and I know that's in the ordinance somewhere. Are any trees being affected here?
Well, there's been a couple trees removed, and our requirements require that they be replaced. And again, they are going to be replaced. Anything that's over 4 inches in caliber should be replanted, and they agreed to do that.
Did you say that the building to the north, the residence to the north, shares a driveway with the church?
They do.
I don't quite understand where that is.
I have the same question. If you could show a picture of the building with a shared access. It's the furthest north one?
Okay.
Yeah.
So I did have some discussions with the engineering division with the county, and one thing that was suggested is that maybe the south of the north too, that the south one be the entrance, because most of the traffic would probably be coming from the south, and then have the north for the church, British Christians, have this be a sort of the exit. But that's the...
Jerry, does the red line
cooperate
on there? I mean, it looks like they're
leaning on the neighbor. Yeah, well, it's supposed to be. I mean, it's what you're looking at is a line drawing, which is the red that you see in an aerial photo. So sometimes there's some discrepancy with, but that's supposed to be a representation of that north property line. But you know, through this project, these boundaries will be surveyed or have been surveyed.
So the neighbor uses the parking lot of the church?
No, to access the property.
To access the property.
Yeah, you can kind of see there's a drive that goes in.
Okay, I didn't see that.
Okay.
Yep. So that's expected when the church in service, I expect that they have no problem with the residents of the north, and they're having a big old picnic or family reunion, they probably use the church parking lot. Am I right, guys? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Karen, I'm not abstaining from conversation about this or vote because I have the potential conflict of interest.
Thanks.
I can't really tell from the drawing how much expansion the footprint of the building is this.
The total square footage is over 6,000 square feet. And at three different levels. And again, it's going to be a phase.
I'm asking the footprint, not the square footage.
Well, yeah.
Part of
the
building up. So
yeah. Off the top of my head, I don't have the exact.
Okay,
but
it's not just building up. It is an increase of the space on the first floor.
Also. Yeah, they're going to start with like the basement level, and then the first level, and then do the upper levels at a later time. Mm-hmm. But they want to encompass everything under this conditional use permit. It's going to be in line with what the current setback was, which is about 20 feet. So, and that's permitted with our non-conforming provision.
So that's not expanding the non-conformity?
No.
Where does the drawing show that?
Pardon me?
Where does the drawing show the front?
Yeah, right there. You can kind of see
that dotted line.
Yeah, this represents like the cover line
overhang.
What's the setback? 50. That was about 1917.
Right.
So as long as they don't, now if they were proposing something that was, you know, 15 feet or 10 feet, then they wouldn't be permitted to do that.
By going further into the setback.
Correct.
But by putting more buildings into the required setback, you have to go back to be an expansion and not conforming.
Right now it's about 20 feet from the west property line, from the west edge of that canopy.
Uh-huh.
I can improve the Aaron's concern. Right now it's just an overhang of some steps.
Right.
Right. And it is that 20 foot setback. But by building is obviously a more permanent structure and expanding it.
I mean, I understand that we're not going further, we're not making the actual setback 15 feet as opposed to 20. So in that sense, we're not expanding that conformity. But we are putting a substantial amount of more new buildings inside the required setback.
With the current area, correct?
It's a matter of interpretation, but I don't think it should be so easily flushed under the rug as not expanding the non-conformity, because you're nearly, or you are more than doubling the amount of building that is inside the required setback.
Right.
And so if you said the required setback is 50 feet for a reason, then there should be as much area as possible that acknowledges that setback.
I don't think specifically, though, that our regulations talk about what you're getting at.
Okay.
But I definitely understand where you're coming from.
Can you picture the west side of the church? Mm-hmm.
Like a photo?
A photo.
It's a beautiful building, and my understanding is, well, I saw it. Usually a building of that age, you see cracks in the brickwork and the mortar, and they knew what they were doing back in 1917.
Yeah, really, they don't build them like that anymore.
It's a beautiful building. So you see why they're interested in.
Now, you said something about 1917?
Mm-hmm.
So their grandfathered in on some of this?
Yeah, I mean, with the setback. A big part of it is the setback.
Yeah, they're the grandfathered in.
Existing structure. Yeah, the question is whether by adding more new structure under today's regulations that don't abide by the setback, whether that is illegal or not conformity or not.
I don't think what they're proposing they have to ask for a variance. I think they're within. I'm not an attorney, but my read of the ordinance is this is something that would be permitted.
If this was a house, okay,
yeah.
They're putting an addition on the house, and it did require a conditional use permit, would you issue the permit?
I would issue the permit.
You wouldn't require them to get a variance for that?
No.
Even though the addition is inside the required setback?
Yeah, because I think you're getting at more than what's identified in the actual language of the non-conforming provision. Because they're not encroaching. Are they adding more? Are they affecting the light and air? Yes.
Is there a reason for that? Actually,
yeah. But
it's also in the middle of a mile. It's not by a corner, so it's getting visibility concerns or anything like that. Would there be any issue of there being visibility concerns by that being permanent for the entrance and the exit?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part of what you said.
It's in the middle of the mile, so it's not on a corner.
Mm-hmm.
So bringing it out further, solid part of the building, is not going to hurt visibility in terms of traffic, except for the driveway. Are you satisfied that the driveways are far enough away that having something solid there rather than something you can look through is not an issue?
We're not concerned with what's being proposed.
Okay.
If that's not affected.
So that would be the only thing I could think of.
Engineering is not an issue.
So, I mean, you take away that covered walkway, the building's like 36 feet from that common, from the west property line.
Sure.
Can we go back to the driveway photo again? Yep. Do the sign on that north driveway, are they going to be on the neighbor's property? I don't know how to interpret that. The red lines are pretty close to our condition.
It's almost
like it's a shared situation. At least that's what it looks like to me. I didn't get anything back from engineering with regard to that, or if there was any concern about it, because there's actually four. There's two on the north end, there's two on the south end, and the two are primarily used for by the parishioners, and then the two on the south are used by the rental.
I just want to ensure, you know, the church is already encroaching, and then there's a sign and different things.
Well, any sign that they put, it would have to be on private property. It cannot, because actually the right-of-way is right here. This one right here is the east right-of-way.
Okay.
So any sign that they have would have to be, you know, east of that right-of-way.
I got you. Okay.
And then same here.
The bathroom building entrance is actually the public
right
of way.
Right.
Isn't it fair to approach and that property line with that entrance?
And there was no communication from that neighbor. You said that no one.
We didn't receive any.
Yeah. Any questions for that?
Would a representative of the applicant like to speak? If you'll please step up to the podium and give us your name and address, please.
Just to clarify, I'm just there.
Angelo Architectural Associates, 12314 Ridgeview Drive, Urbandale, Iowa, 50323. I was just there, and the red line is close, but I stood here and I looked at the corner posters here and here. It really runs on this side, so you're exactly right. It splits the driveway right down the middle, and there was a survey pin right in the middle of that driveway.
Okay,
any comments from the public on this application?
Final decision?
What are your thoughts? I make a motion that we accept number two.
We have a motion by Miller and a second by Murphy to, I'm going to ask clarification on your motion.
Give it back up this question.
Okay. Sorry.
That's all I'm hearing you.
I would interpret that to mean you are recommending approval based on staff
recommendation. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Any other discussion on the motion? We have a roll call vote, please.
Fields?
Yes.
Merkin?
Yes.
Farnwell?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
All right, thank you. Your application will then be to the Board of Adjustments for the final decision. All right, we are on to CUP 3-08.
Frank Grove Orchard,
final
change. Okay. Again, Frank Grove Orchard, Steve Black is the applicant. He's requesting to do a kids' farm camp. This is considered a major modification, primarily because of if things work out as Mr. Black is proposing, there's potential for increase in traffic to the property, to the neighborhood. Site is located at 32835 610th Avenue, Cambridge. Some of these photos and site photos you've seen a few months ago when we looked at the conditional use permit modification that was before you. Again, this is Highway 210 to the south, and this is 610th Avenue to the east. Much of the building, the buildings and the activity area, the animals, the play and recreational areas are in the southeast portion of the property that he owns. Location map again, several hundred acres. We're talking about eastern limit, 610th Avenue, Highway 210 to the south. This shows you on the north side of the buildings the traffic area. For the most part, what he's proposing to do, he's trying to get something started for this summer. He's envisioning having a week camp in June and then having a week long camp in July. However, long term, his goal would be to have maybe 4 to 6 weeks offered in both June and July. But for the most part, the parking would be on the north side of the building. The idea is that parents would drop their kids off in the morning around 9 o'clock. The real young kids, the parents would come back at noon and pick them up and take them home. The older kids, 3rd grade through 8th grade, they would come back at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So potentially we're talking about four different trips, times the number of people, times the number of cars. Parking area on the north side, again, there's several spaces on the north side for parking. You're looking at the handicap parking spaces. Again, this is after you enter the main building, where you pay to go through, primarily used for the apple orchard. Looking at some of the activity areas, there's a slide to the far back area. This is actually looking like west, and we're kind of west of where most of the buildings are. This is a drawing that Steve provided with this application. The purple area in the southeast portion is where the livestock is. Recreational area in here, apple orchard, natural area, that's where the pond is, and this is where that train was. Hay field shows up in green, pumpkin patch, some of the crops that he has in yellow, and then again the orchard. So then the idea is that the kids would come, they would learn about growing various things, corn, apples, other products, and then also learn how to take care of livestock, and then there would be some play and activity time in there as well. Steve is here, and I'll let him talk about the program. We're showing this because of one of the things that we're suggesting is with the play and activity area, we heard from some of the area residents with the previous conditional use permit about noise that they heard from kids playing and such. And one of the things that we're recommending is that Steve plant trees on the east and south edge of where the play area is. And again, we're showing this is a topography map, and there are some trees in this area, but the grade does drop down. A lot of those trees are kind of in the lower area. So where you see the lines kind of going close together, that means that the grade is dropping. So particularly in this area, you can see that there's a lot of fall. So a lot of those trees are lower, and they're likely not providing the sound buffer. So again, the proposal is for a modification. It's a major modification. We mentioned that the applicant's planning a week-long day camp, 24 preschool to second graders, time period 9 a.m. to 11 for those, 30 to 80. Again, this is if things work out with what he's proposing to do. He is intending to add around 10 to 12 new staff. In comparison, again, with the apple orchard, that's end of August, the time period through the end of December. It's open 7 days a week, 9 a.m. to 7 a.m., and then they have extended hours for reservations only. Hours get reduced again in November, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday 8 to 5, Sunday 8 to 4. Anticipated traffic, again, the current threshold is anywhere from 44 to 52 cars. But again, with peak traffic, if this works out as Steve hopes it will, and we're looking at really trips because, again, to and away from the site is two trips. So with the number of kids that are proposed and with the current traffic levels with his current staff, deliveries that he gets, we could potentially see 300 to 400 trips in the month of June and July. So again, that's what kind of bumps this into a major category of conditional use permit. And again, he provided information about the itinerary of what's proposed, and again, Steve's here, and I'll let him talk about that. We're into the staff report, talking about compatibility of what's proposed with the site and how it's going to affect the adjacent property owners. Again, the property is in a rural area of the county. It is surrounded by ag, crop ground, creeks, drainage areas. But there are, however, a few residences, one to the east, one to the south. The applicant does plan to use the existing site, existing buildings, the farm fields that we showed you. and existing play and recreational areas. He's not planning to add any more buildings for this particular operation that's proposed. Transition, buildings are located in the southeast area of the site. You've got some treed area to the southeast. A lot of those trees are in the lower level. We're suggesting that that be a condition that additional trees be added for buffering. Traffic, applicant does anticipate using their east main access, and again, if they do have parents stay with their kids, they would park on that north parking lot. It's about a 7-acre area, so there's adequate space for the number of cars that are proposed. We went through the numbers there. Comparison of vehicle count information for the apple orchard. Again, we talked about during the peak time during the orchard, there's like 2,700 vehicles, which equates to about over 8,000 people, which was a pretty significant increase, which kind of prompted the need to request. You know, if you look at that and you look at the DOT count, prompted the need to request a traffic study to be done, which, again, with this request, staff is recommending that this particular program be folded in to that requirement as well. Parking and loading, again, we don't have a specific standard. This is a part of the farm retail and novelty use. There isn't a specific standard for that, but again, there's ample space on the north side of the buildings. He's got 32 handicapped parking spaces, delivery trucks and buses, again, primarily buses for the apple orchard. They use that north access into the property. No signs of lighting are proposed. Again, this is during the day. There's going to be no overnight stays. I'm not sure if it went through. We're going to probably, if this progresses, there's going to be likely noise added from vehicles as well as some noise from kids heard during the time periods where they have playtime. Probably most of the day they're going to be working. They're going to be working with livestock. They're going to be learning and getting educated about farm life. We did route it to all the departments for comments. The big thing really came back from the Environmental Health Department. Steve is working with the DNR. He does have an engineer. And one of the conditions is that get resolved, that the permit get obtained, and that it be installed before this activity or this operation occurs. And again, that's one of the conditions. We did send notices April 22 regarding the permit to all the property owners within a quarter mile of all of the properties that he owns. I did receive a call today from an adjacent landowner to the south of his property who is in opposition to it. And the two points that she raised is that she thinks that the traffic situation with regard to the orchard operation should be dealt with first before this aspect is added. And also, she thought that there should be a threshold for how much, how many kids could be a part of this activity. And again, generally, she was in opposition to it. So this takes us to the conditions. Staff is recommending approval, but we do have the four conditions. One is, again, one of the requirements from last time is that he hire an engineer to study the traffic. We think that this should be a part of that study, which that's what two talks about. So we're folding this condition we submit, the previous one, and the first one that was granted in 08. Permits are valid for a year. We're to get analysis from the engineer on what the impact is to the traffic on the adjacent roads. What is recommended? Is there an issue? If there is, what is recommended? Whether it be turning lanes, signalization, whatever it is. Ultimately, that's a cost to be borne by the applicant. And then, again, to assist with the buffering, we're suggesting trees be planted and to be installed within a year's time period. And then, again, the wastewater treatment system, that be installed before this activity occurs. So this leads us to the alternatives, and the one that we're recommending is 2, which is approval with the conditions, and that would give us the opportunity to get it on the agenda for the May 18 board adjustment. And with that, I'd be happy to answer your questions.
In your proposal, it's a number of weeks. It says 2 weeks, but then it says maybe 4.
Initially, like the first year, he wants to do 2 sessions, 1 in June, 1 in July.
Do you know why those would be higher than consecutive weeks? I'm not going to do one in July. Is there a reason for that?
I would yield to Steve on that.
Okay.
But I know he's told me that ultimately he would like to build. You know, I think this is kind of a testing to see if there's interest out there for it. And then if there is, then most of the training would be the month of, operating in the month of June, and then a week or two in July.
So, Gary, is it two weeks were approved for this summer, and then he came back and said he wanted to stand 4 to 6. Would you consider that a modification?
Actually, it should be a part of this, because that's what we're looking at. Because he's thinking 20 to 30 some kids now the first year, but we're looking at the big picture here. And if he gets the number of kids interested, which is a little over 100, that's going to bring us to the 300 to 400 trip range, and that's what bumps it into this major modification classification. So that's really what we're looking at, the potential for this activity, this operation to grow.
So, in other words, the commission should consider an operation that is more like 4 to 6 weeks. That's what we're really looking at here.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Calculation of the number of trips that include a trip on each end for each TA, even on the morning session 9 to 11.
That's built into it because the little ones, the parents are going to drop them off in the morning, and then they're going to come back and get them. And then you've got the older kids, the parents are going to drop them off. And they're going to, so you got the dropping off and the leaving, and then the dropping off.
I think that's generous.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do it, except I think that's a pretty generous estimate of not, given their location part, that every parent is going to drive their dropping off for 2 hours.
Some might
leave and come back.
Some might stay. You know, I don't think Steve knows exactly how, it's going to work, but.
But even if we go to 4 weeks in June and 4 weeks in July, still each week is going to be only 24 kids from 9 to 11, and then the next week, or would it be the same? No. Would it be the same week that we're doing the morning thing for the preschoolers? And you can answer that in a bit. Okay, well, that's the question. And then the 30 to 80 of the 3rd to 8th grade, would that, from 9 to 4, would that be in the same week?
Yeah. I think it's to overlap. So you got young kids, preschool to second grade, and then 3rd to 8th grade, and they're all going to be there at the same time. It's just that the younger kids are going to be picked up by noon.
But still, each week, it's only going to be that number of kids. So it's not like we're going to have, it's not like we're going to increase 24 by 4. Because it's going to be still that week, each week those numbers.
Right, and
so
again, these are estimates.
It's not going to be a massive increase, huh?
These are estimates.
Yeah, right. I understand. Could be 22 kids, could be 26 kids.
Could be. And then I don't know what the low threshold is. If he gets 5 or 10 kids, I don't know if he'll do it. Because it has to work.
Have to work with the number of employees that they have, too. The whole thing is. It has to be a coordinated effort, understandably.
Jerry?
When we sent this on to the zoning board of adjustments last time,
and the traffic study was a condition. Remind me when the traffic study was to start and when it was to end, or when, what the dates were for that?
The meeting was was March, and I think the information is supposed to be to us, staff, and P&Z and Board of Adjustment, like 2 weeks before. So like December, January, that's when we're expecting to get results.
You need to come in on that study during their peak operation.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
we have a situation now where we're, before finding out if there's a problem, we're potentially adding more traffic.
And that's why we're suggesting that he's already required to hire an engineer to study it. We're suggesting that this be included with that study.
Well, then will it be, it's going to expand next year, so we'll wait and do the traffic study when we have get more vehicles on that road?
Well, the permit that was granted last time was for a year.
This request is for this June and July.
Correct.
Okay.
Another question.
Sure.
It looks like day camps are considered child care facilities, and I have a department of human services regulate those. And I wonder if the applicant has obtained a permit for that.
That is something that has not come up. But again, Mr. Black is here.
So questions are better fielded by the staff than by the applicant?
The trees. So say you're going to put trees in a year that will muffle noise. Whether it's going to be deciduous, coniferous, how many rows, how tall, because it might be quite a while before the trees do any ruffling of noise.
Yeah, I think staff would welcome input. Evergreens are probably going to give you the best benefit right away. And you can install 4 to 6 foot.
Okay.
You'll probably get the greatest benefit right away compared to installing other trees.
Okay. Thank you. And just one neighbor responded?
Correct, to the south.
Okay, how many neighbors are there?
Well, there's a residence to the east and a residence to the south. Those are the two closest.
Okay. With the 50% of the neighbors responded.
Well, and it wasn't the one directly south. It was this person's actually further south than across the street.
Really?
Yes.
And was the final objective the traffic noise, or these little kids having a good time?
I think it's the volume of traffic, and it was more of a focus on how it's been with the orchard traffic volumes and allowing this would just add to the traffic that's on these roads in the neighborhood, and that it's an agricultural area and it's shifting to something different than.
But in terms of noise,
cultural.
Was it the traffic noise, or was it the kids having fun with noise?
Kids' noise having fun. That was something that came up with the complaint, and at the last meeting, it was mentioned.
The emergency plan, Gary, can you remind me of the time frames on the emergency plan that was to be developed?
It was 90 days, and I know Steve, we've had some discussion about it. I know he's working on that.
So the emergency plan would need to be?
The safety plan?
The safety plan. The tornadoes, et cetera, would be in place before the camp were built.
That was one of the questions that we asked, if this is being considered with the plan that he's working on. He said it is.
Okay.
My name is Steve Black. My address is 32835, 610th Avenue, Chambers. I'll do a little force here. So, do you have questions? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah,
we can take
questions.
I do. I can have an afterwards if you want to question first. So, the point of the camp was just to educate kids and farm life. The short-term goal, like Jerry said, was maybe offer a week or two this year to see how it goes. The long-term is to offer something in 4 weeks of June about, maybe a week or two in July. Obviously, you know, on 4th of July, you can't bring it in that week. So that's why you have a gap between the 2 months. The primary focus is just June, the month of June. The numbers Jerry mentioned of 80 kids for the 3 to 8 year old, or 3rd to 8th grade, is kind of cap, only because the facilities we have to serve everybody lunch and have everybody seated. That's kind of what we want to deal with. We don't really want to deal with that anymore. So that in turn, like you said, the generous traffic count of 400 is still shot pretty high on. So there, the 24 kids for the, I don't know what you want to say, preschool age kids, are kind of a limit too. We don't really want to have much more than that. So those are really kind of limits we want. We don't really want to expand. We don't want to have a lot more than that. This is just the math. Ideally, you know, if we had 50 kids in a week, that's pretty comfortable to have. The issue of the traffic, Jerry's right. You would have cars potentially coming from leaving right away. You might have some parents who have the young kids who stick around and stay for 2 hours while the kids are in camp and then they take them home. Obviously, you're going to have kids that have maybe 2 to 3 kids per family dropping off, and that's the thing I don't really have a solid number on. The timeline is 9 to 4. There is a little bit of play time in there. The suggestion of a tree barrier in part of the farm. I feel like if you stay in that farm where the tree is suggested and you look at adjacent properties, since you stay in those areas, all you see are trees. So to add more trees, I don't know if it's quite the solution, and I don't know if it is really even doing anything if we did add trees since there's trees there to begin with. There is a big drop off and they'll come back up, but that is basically all trees. And there are other areas too where kids play, so if you're going to have complaints of noise of other kids in our areas, there's other areas of farm too. So you're basically asking for a wall of trees down around me and my property, so I feel like that's a little unrealistic. The septic, we are in the middle of the process of met with the Iowa DNR. We have preliminary meeting with them to figure out what systems they have a specific requirement of how you go about presenting the information. We had the preliminary meeting. We go back, we come up with a final plan, we suggest it to them again, and that's where we're at. Just getting that final plan to go back to them and say this is where we're at. It's very realistic to start this project in the middle of June and have it completed middle of July this session. To have it suggest that we have the permit for the system in place by the farm camp starts, the kids being here, if we had 100 kids, or 300, something like this, 75 kids maybe, plus the toilet, washing hands, you know, 3 gallons a person, you're looking at maybe 1,600 gallons a week, and I have like 26,000 gallons of storage, so I could store it all until the system's done, so with the small amount I'm looking at doing potentially 3,000 gallons, even if it was 3,000 gallons, I could haul that to the city of Huxley and have it treated, and that's still approved. I don't understand why we'd have to have the system technically done and put in place and completion before we actually start the farm camp, because we have means of treating the waste that we have. I think that covers all my ideas. And you asked about permits for the daycare. I have not obtained a permit for the whatever that's the only other term you have, but I have not obtained a permit yet.
Okay. Day camps are considered daycare. Their requirements include extensive licensing, training, hiring practices, criminal history record checks, and a reporter requirement, staff certified CPR and other medical treatment and prevention areas, an extensive written policy on child biting, minimum staff training requirements, records on staff background, medical records of the child, ADA compliance, food establishment compliance, lots of safety issues, possibly staff inoculations. So this is the whole new territory if you're talking about managing children for an entire day without their parents present, there's a whole lot of regulation on that, as there would be for a school or a daycare. So day camps fall under that. life insurance. This is getting into territory that doesn't seem like it has anything to do with the farm, novelty, or retail. Safety, you mentioned canoeing. You're going to have lifeguards. I mean, I have a lot of questions, but I'll just explain it now. But I've worked in public education most of my life, so I know that things happen with children, and you're talking about even preschoolers. There's a 3-hour limit on preschool. The amount of time you can have a preschooler, by the way, and so you're 9 to 12 would be the limit for that. So you don't have a license for this?
I have not seen a commitment, no.
Okay.
I have comments somewhere. I have a
Some questions for the applicant, how will we comment during the project?
I don't have any other questions.
I do. When you say preschool, 2 second grade, okay, we're not talking 3-year-old. We're talking 4-year-old?
4-ish. Yeah, I didn't have a set parameter of age.
Okay. Because obviously the care needed for a 3-year-old is different than a 4 or 5-year-old in terms of their minding you. Right?
Cool.
So, I don't think that that's really part of the conditional use permit, but I think that you would want to make some stipulations about that kind of thing. And the other question is, how much interest has been given to you? In other words, you talking to Paris, or Paris calling you saying, hey, that's a great idea. I'm sure interested in that. I sure bring my kids. How much have you gotten?
Well, since we don't have approved, I haven't promoted it at all to try to get anything, because I feel like if you try to promote something or ask about it, people want to start planning for it. And if I don't have this process in place to put it in place to actually do it, see if we can, I feel like that's not a good business sense to do. Will I get interest? Yes. Will I get 80 kids right away? No. Will I get 20 or 30? I think I could. Is that comfortable to get started? Yes. For as far as the business side of things? Yes.
How many staff do you say are going to hire?
Depends on how many kids you have. There's requirements on how many kids you have for staff per children. So if we only had 20 kids, we might have 3 to 4 staff total.
And if I remember correctly, the ratios are by age. You can't just say for a child, yeah. You can say for this many kids, you need this many staff. It depends on the ages that you have.
That's correct.
Yeah, and it's pretty well defined for the ages.
Okay.
And actually, this is kind of for Jerry also. And my understanding that the previous conditional use permit application has been approved.
Correct.
For 1 year, right? And so the only thing we're really looking at is this daycare.
Correct.
Am I correct?
It was approved with those 9 conditions.
Okay. All right. With the DNR and the subject system and all that. But this is just about the day camp.
Correct.
Okay. So, and I find it concerning that you haven't done a preliminary study to determine the interest. And simply saying, hey, we're looking at this. If we can go forward with this, would you be interested in bringing this in? All right. That does not say that they're going to want to sign up and force you to sign them up. You know, it's kind of like when somebody wants to put in a restaurant or a new Burger King or a new McDonald's. They do a significant study to see, is this the right location and yada, 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 which would be the same kind of thing for what you're looking at here. Okay. My point is this. If you don't find any interest, this is a new approach. You see what I think it's a great idea. Don't get me wrong. However, it's kind of a moot point for you to have this discussion. If you went to, and you don't want the parents,
and you went and said, hey, listen, we're thinking about doing this. How much interest do I have? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, is there a question? I'm sorry.
That's the question, you know, is how legitimate is it that this even be on our table?
So if I only had 10 people sign up, does that make a difference if I go through this process or not?
Well,
my point is that I by putting this out there, knowing other camps and they're booked and you can't get into them, and we have a popularity of people following us who want to come out to our farm and do things, and the staff that we do have so they would send their kids here just among the staff, I'm putting two and two together and wanting to slowly start into this process, knowing I can get a handful of kids, handful being upwards of 10 to 20 kids to do this for a summer camp, knowing I can get that.
So essentially, you have done an interest process.
I have done it amongst a very dull system. I have not gone out to customers on Facebook or any other source of randomly asking people and done a full dull study of people who want to come out and do this, how much they pay the internet. I have not done that.
Okay.
I've asked my staff members. I've asked what they think would happen if I offered it. And knowing that other camps are booked and you can't get into them and they offer similar activities, talking to other farms across the United States to do the same thing, what they do, what they offer, that's the extent of my study.
Have any of these, I mean, for your apple orchard as an example, I suspect that you have repeat customers. And have any of them, because you know them, because they're repeat customers. And in any discussions with them that may have kids along that they're picking apples, had any kind of discussion, hey, you know, what would you think if?
I have not.
Okay. So it's just been a step.
Correct.
I'm curious. A couple of things. I mean, Mike, we have to have this replaced place without asking people if they're there to be people. And so I think, so we get the conditional use permit, we accept the happy people. But my real question is, Mr. Black, the traffic for this particular program would be considerably less than the traffic you have for a day during the fall, is that correct?
That's correct.
Donna Tallman, 61384 Highway 210, Cambridge. I live the corner south, a half mile east of about a quarter mile lane. And I don't mind kids playing noise because, you know, it's fun to listen to as such. I don't know if the trees would help. It's a good idea if it would. But the last thing, the apple orchard, they were going to permit loudspeakers only in case of emergencies. And I wondered if that was the same on this, if it was going to be a no loudspeaker allowed. That was my concern, is loudspeaker noise. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from the public? We can cut off commission comments by the staff right there. During the overarching CUP, would limit that would limit speakers and
sorry, unless there's an emergency situation,
the same condition will apply to
an announcement if you need it to
the operation. Okay. Commissioner Hoffman.
Just to reiterate, it looks like this will require approval at the daycare facility with expenses in terms of requirements for training, licensing to the establishment. Regulation, safety, records that are kept on staff and on the children. The mandated recorder, criminal history background, So I have a lot of concerns about that. I understand there is no license in place.
These are all state requirements, so what you're talking about?
State of Iowa. They're the Iowa Department of Human Services.
So I have... No, I'm not testifying as an expert witness or anything. I've participated in managing church camps, and I have previous work history in managing daycare sites and summer camps for YMCA. And there are extensive requirements related to staff and the education of staff and certifications and things that are required to do that. So I guess the point of my conversation is that Mr. Black pointed out that this is for farm education, which is a good approach. It's very similar to the field trips and things that you run. I think the fundamental difference here is that with the field trip, the onus is on the schools to provide the experts and the correct ratio of experts to man that. And your facility as a field trip destination doesn't need any kind of certification or anything. They bring it with them. With doing this, even as if we look at it even as an extension of, you know, an extended field trip kind of situation, the fact that people are bringing their kids and dropping them off turns it into a daycare facility. So that fundamentally changes the requirement. And for me, it also fundamentally changes the nature of the CUP. So the question is now not... I don't have any issues with the traffic because it's less traffic than the other activities that happen during different times of the year. I don't have any issues with whether or not there's been an interest survey or anything like that. I have issues with the fact that it is a daycare. And there's a precedent for this CUP for daycare. This is not, I don't know that this CUP falls within the within the farm and retail model here. I don't think this falls within that, the scope of that CUP. So maybe that's a question for Jerry. Does a daycare fall within farm and retail novelty?
I guess staff does not consider this to be a daycare. I'm not going to speak to what the state requirements are because I'm not knowledgeable about the state requirements. If he's got state requirements that he needs to meet, then he has to do that on his own. And we have separate rules and regulations that we're responsible for.
I would question that if this commission's responsibility is to worry about any licensing or rules and regulations for daycare, you're not here asking us to approve daycare. To approve the conditional use permit to do this. The state will worry about it, not our district. It's not, I like the car department to worry about the daycare thing.
The connection is with the farm and retail novelty because it talks about demonstrations, and that's a big part of what he's trying to do. He's trying to educate maybe kids from the cities on what it's like, you know, how do you grow things, how do you take care of a pig or a goat, you know, bringing them to this rural life and give them a snapshot of what it's like.
I totally get that.
And we think that there is a connection to the farm, retail, and novelty, and that's why we suggested that. And I guess our focus was the potential for traffic because we think everything else meets that. What we have is the definition for now. But long term, going forward, we're going to be working on specific rules.
Ethan, yeah. What's your intention that if not this commission is necessarily our business to look at whether or not it is a daycare center? We do have some information on that that is before us. My concern would be that if we approved this and the applicant did not decide this isn't a daycare center, I'm not going to do that, where that leaves us.
You're saying if it gets approved and he decides not to do it?
Correct. He says, oh, they thought it was a daycare center, but I really don't, so I'm not going to do that. After the discussion we've had on the record, I'm and I am concerned. Yes.
Can I interrupt for a moment, please? Can we please structure our questions, if there are questions, add questions and give Jerry an opportunity to answer them? We'll go one at a time here.
No comment.
But if you have a question for Jerry, please direct it to Jerry and let Jerry answer it before we move on.
I just have another comment. We don't approve sewage facility either, but we're requiring a DNR permit before the DNR, of course, will do its work. So I see the other thing I'm seeing in all of this. We're not moving from the approved upper pretty daycare. But it so happens that the day camp is regulated that way in Iowa. So the Jewish facilities are regulated. Why is it not?
I'm inclined to agree with Jerry for the most part that the game is supposed to just interfere in the basic business decisions of businessman, of business person here, and that he could take the information provided under advisement and say, okay, we're just going to require parents to say. That's a fantastic business decision, and it eliminates the issue for the company, a decision he should make. That is until Marvin brought up the very, very real, I think, valid land use issue. That when does the shift land uses, and that is something I think that we need to deal with, is when does a program at a retail novelty farm become a different use? And I have a great answer to that. Now I will ask you a question, Jerry.
Sure.
How do we define daycare in our ordinance?
You want to look?
And is it allowed in the A1 district? Because if we address it by definition, then it doesn't really matter what the state's definition is. The state still has this requirement that we've got ours.
Jerry,
can
you
repeat
that?
Well, daycare is not identified.
It is. In what district is the daycare permit?
Is there a CUP? Is that what you're asking?
I'm saying all.
It's probably required a conditional use permit.
Mm-hmm. It's addressed. But I'm afraid you might have to go district by district to know how it's addressed.
Child care centers. Conditional use permit in A1 district. Permitted in others.
Conditional use in A1?
Child care center, yeah. So I think with what was proposed, I thought our view was that there was a connection to farm recall and novelty. Because of the demonstration aspect of the definition that we have, and they're trying to educate kids about the care of livestock, how to grow things. He wants to educate them about the Black farm history, other things of that nature. So we thought that there was a connection.
I think I agree fundamentally that the goal is education, and I think that we've endorsed that with the other approvals of the other CEP. I think the fundamental difference is the care of the children. So in the previous demonstrations and educational, their fundamental role was the educational presentation aspect of it. With this CUP, that role becomes secondary to child care. Child care becomes the fundamental, and then whatever you do while you have the kids becomes educational, and it doesn't have to be farm-related or anything. You could do whatever, but your primary role at that point is parents drop off kids, you take care of kids, and help parents pick up kids.
Given the age of the professional.
Which is not.
It works for a 16 and 17 year old.
The requirements, right, whatever the child care facility requirements change based on ages. And again, I don't want to get into what Jerry's comments are true. I don't care to get into that other than if you're providing care for children, then that's in my mind a different CUP than farm and retail novelty.
You brought up a really good.
Thank you.
You, Carlos? Yeah. You brought up a real good issue, like if a sewage, possible sewage situation, we put the condition on when they get the permission from the DNR, right? A condition from the president. Right. Now,
you have to see that to permit.
What if we...
Once they permit fishing, you have to see that. That's what you ask for. Just a copy of it.
Okay. So, what would it be possible that in this situation, we say that the condition would be to contact the... What is it? Human Services? What are they called?
Department of Human Services. Yes. I'm Department of Human Services.
To contact them to...
We could stipulate to make that a requirement that if they're going to run a daycare that they get certified, right?
That's what I'm saying.
That's step two of is daycare a permitted use or fall under the CUP of farm and regional novelty for running a daycare?
It could be two CUP.
No, I'm saying that is running a child care facility a permitted use on A1 zoning? And if it's not, then it would need a conditional use permit, right? And is farm and retail novelty the right?
It's not been permitted under the CUP under that category.
Right.
Exactly.
Meeting those requirements.
Exactly.
So a condition of it would not be appropriate.
That's my question is a CUP for farm and retail novelty the right authority to say that you can run a daycare on the farm?
And I would agree with that because of the hours that you're looking at. If you're looking at it having child from 9 to 4, that's obviously...
Well, and without any parental supervision, right, you're providing care for
them. Exactly.
Commission? We can make a motion here under any of the resident alternatives presented by staff, which motion we also include postponement to wait for more information from the staff and applicant. I would also love the idea out there that the applicant could ask that we postpone this to be considered a later date if you'd like to consider the structure of the application. Are there any motions?
Don't make me think it. Any
comments?
Yeah.
How about maybe questions? I get the feeling, based on what she stated, the issue is more land use and how I applied for it. If you're asking if I need to reroute how I apply for it, if that's what you're thinking, I would rather do that. Look at that alternative. If you think that's going to postpone this, because either way, we're looking at coming back. My comment is, if you think that's issue, I need to reapply for it in a different manner, I would be happy to do that.
I don't think you have to submit a fresh application, an application fee, and that sort of thing, but I guess if you're hearing the comments here, it might be a good idea to at least take another month to consider the structure of the application.
Correct.
Is that what you might do?
I'm okay with that.
Okay. We still need a motion from the commission.
I'll make a motion to table the decision on CUP. CUP03-08 Snowgrow Orchard and table discussion for applicant reassessment. That's the alternative for all alternative four.
So the zoning commission is what he's asking for. This is going to be a child daycare center. Is that what he's asking for? I'm a little confused about what he's asking for now.
The applicant has, this is going to be our action. This is not the applicant's action.
Right.
Okay, but the applicant has indicated to us that he might have some time to reconsider this. So if you'd like to take that action to give him that opportunity, then the alternative, appropriate alternative would be number four.
Okay. So based on the applicant's comments on Jeff and commission's discussion, I make a motion to accept alternative four from the staff, which is to remand it back to the applicant for further review and or modification.
All right, we have a motion by Smith and a second by Miller. Do we have any discussion on the motion?
What I'm hearing is you're saying if we leave it to child care facility, not a function of a novice farm. I somehow want that on notice. So we don't go through the same thing again. If that's how the majority of the commission feels, I somehow want to have that on record.
Well, we cannot accept the majority without a vote.
I know that.
Okay, but I think definitely if you could just make sure that the minutes reflect that, that was the impression of the applicant.
I'll say clearly for the record that for Smith, that based on the CEP application of the description of the event, it appears, in my judgment, to be a daycare facility, and I am not sure that that falls under the CUP that was applied for. So that's my opinion, and but the applicant has requested, and we're making a motion before to.
I like that motion. I like that action because I think that it speaks to the proposal that the applicant may convey that are basically business decisions that you should make freely. And we can have it look at it again, we wouldn't be dealing with something that's really about the maintenance.
I still want to put it on the record so if this time again comes up again, we've got a record.
Any other comments or discussion about the motion?
Smith?
Yes.
Cable?
Yes.
Merchant?
Yes.
Steele?
Yes.
Barnwell?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
We'll take it up again. And we'll take it up again next month.
We'll release it again.
Yeah, thank you. Chris is a little point. Is he going to have to pay another middle fee?
I wouldn't think so.
Okay.
Okay. We're on to subdivision 0216, the
Myers. Yes. The applicant is Bob Gibson, Civil Design Advantage, LLC. They're at 3405 Southeast Crossroads Drive, Street G, Grand Iowa. Property owner is James Walton Country Club. Developer is Chris Gardner, Bella Homes. Aerial photo, this is in Franklin Township. It's on the northwest side of the City of Ames. City of Ames corporate limits is shown in blue. Again, right in this area. There's a little coastal view. For the most part, the land use is agricultural in nature. There is a church directly to the west of the site. There are four separate residential subdivisions off to the west, starting about an eighth of a mile, along located along Cameron School Road. The land use to the east, again, that's inside Ames corporate limits, that's also agricultural. To the south is also ag land. This is a little closer view. What is being proposed is a housing development. We've got single-family and bi-attached homes being proposed. The 14 single-family, we've got some drawings to show you. But the single-family would be located along the south side of the Golf and Country Club. The bi-attached housing would be on the north side of the Country Club. And they're proposing three separate lots for single-family homes that would have frontage along 190th. This is the zoning. Everything that's in orange is R2 zoning, and that's where the housing would be. Again, on the south end, single-family, north end, the three units, and then the bi-attached on the north side of the country club. The zoning of the actual golf course is A1 district. You also see that surrounding the property to the west. There's, again, some outlying areas about an eighth of a mile west of the golf course that's R1 residential, and again, there's about four developments in that area. This is the first drawing. Again, this is from Civil Design Advantage. The applicant is here today, as well as the developer. They're proposing a cul-de-sac road. There's 14 lots that are shown around that proposed road. They're proposing to extend a new road extending east from George Washington Carver to this road, which will be dedicated publicly. It'll be a public road. This shows the 16 bi-attached lots. There would be one single-family lot on the north end, but the rest of these would be bi-attached units. And it would actually be where the access is going into the Ames Golf and Country Club, which is right across the road from the church, parallels the same access point. There will be two private roads that would extend into each of these bi-attached housing units. And they are showing some open space areas within that development. Here, I believe, in this area as well. There is no common open space shown where the single family lots are, other than the golf course. There you can see the three single family lots. Again, they have frontage along 190th. This shows you proposed future extension of sewer. What's planned for right now are Advantex systems. It would be an on-site system that would be used until such time the area is annexed and city water and city sewer is brought to this development. The landowners, the developer, have been working with the city for probably about 2 years on details, and we'll go through some of that in a minute. This is the drive that goes in. You see the golf course clubhouse. Again, that's the main drive. The development would have the two private roads that would extend to the north and south from this drive. And then the single family, that would be off of a new road that would be extended easterly to that cul-de-sac. Looking back out to the road to the west, this is the maintenance building. This will be relocated to the northeast portion of the site through this project. When it was constructed, it was in the 70s. It was in an A1 district. It was permitted conforming use. Current status today in an R2 and an A1 golf course is considered non-conforming. So prior to reconstructing, for the new maintenance building, that will likely require a conditional use permit. We're looking to the south. We're on the west end of the site, looking southward. This is where the single-family home would be constructed. And we're looking to the west at the church. This is the area where the bi-attached housing would be. And since I was at the golf course, I had to take a photo of the golf course for good measure. This is looking from the road easterly. We'll be turning south. And that's the land to the south, to the west.
I think that's where we're looking
at. South, yeah, correct. This is Cameron School Road. We're looking westerly. So this is where the new road will be extended easterly to of the cul-de-sac road. We're looking for the church. Background information, again, it's a major subdivision. This is a preliminary plat. There's 18 single-family lots, 16 bi-attached. Lot sizes range from 12.9 to a little over 37,000 square feet, or like three-quarters of an acre. An acre is 43,560. Bi-attached will be under 7,500 square feet approximately. This is in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, and it's in the rural transitional residential area. The proposed density in that plan is 1 to 3.75 units per acre, which meets that requirement. Again, the cul-de-sac road will be a public road. The two other roads will be private roads. And again, it's currently zoned R2 where the housing is. Golf course, however, is in an A1 district. History, again, the permit was issued in the 70s, and it was a permitted use, golf course, country club. 1973 is when the zoning permit was issued for the clubhouse and the maintenance building. And rezoning of the property occurred in October of 2006 for the 55 acres that showed up in orange. Land use, again, the country club, the golf course, has frontage on George W. Carver to the west, 190th to the north. Both are public paved roads. Land use is predominantly, right now, large agricultural crop ground. Likely to change in the future. The Christ Community Church is to the west. The church and the golf course, the accesses line up off of George W. Carver. There are a few scattered residences to the north and south, but again, we've got the development to the west, which include Jamison, Northwood Heights, Squaw Valley South, and Bell Woods. And then the property is contiguous to the city of Ames to the east, and that land is agricultural, row crop. Approximately the west 600 feet, the north 300 feet is the R2, and the balance of them is the golf course, which is A1. Zoning to the north is A1, east agricultural, that's in the city of Ames. A1 to the south, to the west A1. Further to the west again was that R1, which is that yellow area. That's where the housing is. There are agreements in place. Again, they've been working on this since 2014. In May of 2014, the golf course requested the Ames City Council to grant waivers to the city's subdivision standards. In return, the city granted the waivers. The owners signed and submitted three required covenants. One dealt with annexation to apply for the annexation at the time the city requested. Two, waive objections to assessments that may be imposed in the future if public improvements are brought to the site as an assessment project. Three, pay any fees associated with the buyout of the Rural Water Service territory. Waivers granted by the city, waiver to allow Xenia to provide water currently rather than require connection to city water. A waiver to allow private septic systems, which are these Advantix systems, rather than connection to sewer, that will come in the future. Waiver of the sidewalk requirement for those single-family just along the tree along 190th. A waiver of the requirement that the lots take access from interior roads. Again, you've got the three that are going to have access if those are approved along 190th. A waiver of the requirement that the residential lots have a buffer from existing streets. Again, you've got the golf course that has some frontage, and again, they're considering that to be the open space. A waiver of the requirement that all lots have access to sidewalks or shared use. Again, this is a reference to the three lots only to the north end. They have worked on revising their plans to work on circulation with the single family and the bi-attached that are to the north. Conditions that were included with the waiver request in 2014 are all public improvements will be treated as if they were in the city, requiring city review of improvement plans, on-site installation inspections, billing to the developer. Developer must apply for and obtain this deals with stormwater. permit and be subject to city fees and inspections. The Ames Planning and Zoning Commission, April 20th, did take this up. These are their comments. Update the plat to show 5-foot sidewalk connection connecting the north end of the Irons Court with the south end of Irons Way and out to George W. Carver. Update the plat to show sidewalk along one side of Irons Way with connections to George W. Carver. Update the sanitary sewer system to show just one method of septic sewer drainage, the drainage field system rather than the piping to the ponds. Again, there's been some changes along the review cycle here. Update to the plat to remove the three lots on 190th. All public improvements will be treated as if this were in the city, requiring city review of the plans, installation, inspections, inspection billing to developer, the drainage, stormwater permit that's required, completion of the Xenia Water Territory Buyout and Territory Transfer Agreement prior to final plat submittal. Again, this is preliminary plat. And then complete an agreement for the phosphorus removal plan prior to final plat. Part of our process with our development regulations, they're permitted to submit for alternative compliance with regard to development requirements, and they did submit for a few items. The one was, again, in an R2 district, you're required to have a common water and a common wastewater system. Again, they're requiring the, or they're proposing on-site systems until it's annexed, and then it would be connected to city sewer. The R2 lot, I think primarily there was, we had comments about setback. There were some adjustments made with current drawings, but some of the initial drawings weren't showing that they were meeting some of the setback requirements. There's an open space requirement. 15% of the development is supposed to be open space dedicated for the benefit of people who have ownership. Primarily, the response that you have there is these are going to be larger lots, and so some of that open space is built into the lot sizes. From the staff perspective, yeah, again, the bycatch housing, they're actually in some common space to maybe walk a dog or do that kind of thing. I think part of, and again, the applicants are here, they can talk about it. I think they're offering membership to the golf course as a part of ownership. But some people are interested in golf course areas primarily because of the views. They may not be interested in participating in golfing. And then I guess, you know, with our requirement, it's a space to be used for a lot of different purposes other than just for golfing, to walk a dog, to walk, to run, to do whatever. I mean, to have leisurely activity with friends and family, that kind of thing. So we've made that a condition. Again, more questions about setbacks. Again, there's been some adjustments made to the drawings. We did route it to all the departments here. The auditor's office is saying any subdivision of the golf course will need to include the entire property, which it is. Engineering is saying that, like, the two lots, if those are approved on, along 190th, they should share an access. We had comments again about the requirement about common sewer, common water, the open space issue, issue with setbacks. And again, a lot of these things have been addressed. Environmental Health Department had significant comments with regard to how it was, the septic systems were designed, but the latest revision, this is the last comment, I think she's pretty, the Environmental Health Department is satisfied with what's being shown. Initially, everything was just going to go to a pipe and then it was going to be dumped after it was processed into these ponds, and they're going to use these ponds to irrigate the golf course. Well, now they're proposing to do more of a lateral type system, which is what was being requested. So the position now is support for what is being shown. We did send notices April 22 to property owners within a quarter of a mile. We did not receive any comments back. Property is not located in the floodplain. Again, staff is recommending approval with the two conditions. One is to provide some common open space, particularly for the single-family unit, and then provide easements, which is something that requires, which they've acknowledged that they would do. And so that brings us to the action, and so planning staff is recommending approval. It would be item number two, approval with conditions, and with that approval and these conditions, we would get it next to the board of supervisors for action on just this preliminary plat. I'd be happy to answer your questions.
How do you live, Mom? Yeah, I see that the Ames Planning and Zoning Commission recommends removal of the three lots on 190th, and you are not.
That was one of the items that was suggested by the planning.
Okay, why did they recommend? Why are you not recommending that? Do you know what the real their reason was to have those? You know.
We'll wait for the applicant to turn along.
Jerry, that's kind of an extension of Linda's question. Are we being asked to approve this with your county provision, but for your respective of the Ames? Are we folding those in?
Yeah, I can tell you.
We fold them in, but it doesn't look like that's the way.
Yeah, from a staff perspective, I think we're okay with the three lots along 190th. The only comment really that we had was that it'd be a shared access for the two lots. But that was an issue that came up at the Planning and Zoning Commission at the City of Ames. Because they're somewhat disjointed from the rest of the development. I think that's part of the concern.
That's the word, other issues, but now I can't find them.
The drawing is shut around, does not have the lots on 190th. Can we see that drawing again?
With the three lots?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
One right there and then these two.
Okay. And we're going to have conditional right then in part of the map. So,
okay. Has there been any traffic study or any information about the traffic with the increased
homes? I do not believe that there's been any studies on traffic over there.
No, but we'll check number. Yeah,
I'm sorry, that's my fault. I don't believe that there is.
Okay. Because I have a concern about, I don't know what the county's plans are. I have heard zero plans from the county or from the City of Ames on how to address traffic under Flushing and Carver. It's a two-lane road. You mentioned that there are now four developments off to the west.
About an eighth of a mile.
There are two new developments within the last year or 2 years on Camden School Road. There's one that's newer. On the south, there's additional development south on North Dakota. There's additional development up off of, I don't know what road, but up off of west of George Washington Carver and Gilbert. This is the direction, this is part of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. More and more development is going to happen that way. And you have a two-lane road with no turn lanes and no traffic control whatsoever. It's 55 miles an hour. So you're driving up there, and then there's cars stopping all traffic to turn left on George Washington Harbor. There's cars stopping traffic to turn left into the church. Now there will be cars slowing and stopping traffic as they turn right into either one of the two streets, the new street
extension.
Extension, well, it's a new street coming off of George Washington Harbor going east.
Correct.
From Cannon School.
Cannon School, right. Correct.
There's no discussions about, there's also bikes that ride on that road which are significantly disruptive because there's no shoulder, there's no bike trail.
Can I add to that, they are proposing a trail that'll be on the east side of George Washington Harbor as part of this development, so they'll be, to get them off.
Will it be the shoulder, or will it be something else?
I think this is one of those things where piecemeal, maybe traffic for these, you know, 35 homes or whatever that number is not going to provide a significant impact. But you add that 35 to the other 35 to the other 35, and it's not something that's an individual responsibility for any individual development, but I think that the city of Ames and the county need to stop approving additions until something's addressed.
This is zoned for this year, so that's important to know that. This is zoned R2 for single family and by attached housing.
And I'm not talking about that, I'm talking about the traffic impact. I'm not even talking about these, again, 55-mile-an-hour zone, two-lane traffic on 190th, where you're adding 3 new drives, or at least 2 new drives.
Let me add to that. I mean, the county pays grants for that and whatever to the high school. That will not take any traffic off of this road. It will take some traffic off of Harbor north of 190th, but it won't take traffic off this 1 mile here.
Correct.
Is George Washington Tyler county still?
North of 190th is actually north of Cameron School Road is county. I think with the most recent annexation up to 190th is now, I think, in the city of Gilbert. Because on the left side is Phoenix Valley, which is now City of Ames. Phoenix Valley is now Ames, and on the right is Northridge, and I think, Cameron School Road is now City of Ames. So, both sides of it, but the road itself, I don't know how that falls under. I could assume that falls under.
Is 190th road just on the north?
190th is north, then Cameron School is
south. Is that 190th?
Cameron School is right.
Okay, so what you said was north of 190th.
Yeah, it's north of Cameron School Road.
Yes.
Just
to follow up on a question that Linda raised, I'm not sure about the three lots on 190th. The property is Ada Hayden Watershed, if you look at the urban fringe map. And so it has to meet conservation standards. And I find the page where it says conservation standards are met, with the exception of those three lots, because they don't have interior roads. That was the reason. Is that right? Okay. So it's kind of related to traffic, I think.
I think there were all kinds of setback issues, right?
I don't know.
No.
Okay.
Sure, I wonder if you could expand on the alternative compliance request from the applicant on this one. Felt like we might have that pretty quickly. In particular, I need a little explanation about many of those required to be dedicated to the public and might not.
Well, for what they're doing, it could be a public or a private. So the cul-de-sac is going to be a public road, and the two shorter ones for the bypass are going to be private roads.
Okay. And that's sure your presentation to the public. When is a new road required to be dedicated as opposed to a private road allowed?
I'm not certain I understand what you're asking. I know with what proposed, this is something that the city of Ames supports.
And sort of kind of on rural subdivisions, my understanding, will allow great deal of private roads to serve more than just a few miles.
Well, this would be a major plat, but I don't know that it would actually be like a considered rural subdivision.
Rural subdivision,
a major plat.
We have to prove the code and law regulations regardless of what the two
things are due. I understand.
I guess I don't understand why a private road is even allowed for this number of lots in Story County, unless the, I don't know, unless the regulations have changed in recent years. But I wonder why. We're asking for a lot of alternative compliance here. We didn't spend much time on that. Do we know if we have a time frame for when the city will take over with sanitary sewers? I mean, it's all hypothetical.
It is. It is. I think within the next few years, I think they're interested in annexing, but it is hypothetical.
All right. It's normally not due. Development, a common water treatment system would be required.
Right.
Okay.
And I can tell you initially with what was shown, it was a no-go, and then through the revisions that were made to it, it's something that has become acceptable. Closely reviewed by the Environmental Health Department.
I'm trying to just ask questions now.
Yeah, no problem.
The commentary.
Yeah.
I think it's probably the best thought I will offer for the user asking. So, any other questions for the panel?
Has the city of Gilbert reviewed this yet?
I do not believe that they have.
But they do need to do the term of
change. They have the right to make a waive that.
They have the right to.
They need to either review it or waive the right.
One last question. I didn't quite understand the regulation of the type of area, but part of your urban fringe plan says that for a development like this that isn't in, it hasn't been annexed yet, there should be dry sewer installed. In other words, I guess that means the piping, even though it isn't going to be hooked up yet. Is that part of the plan here?
You may see something in the policy for that. That's not something that they're proposing to do, is install dry sewer.
Okay,
good.
And I'm trying to, because it's also in the urban fringe plan, also.
Right.
Okay.
That's a good question.
Any questions?
Okay, applicant, we'd love to hear you. Bob Gibson, Civil Design Advantage, 3405 Southeast Crossroads, Stars and Grimes, and Chris Gardner with Bell Homes Jefferson. So I think we might have to remind us on the way through all those things that came up. I'm going to start with the last, the sanitary sewer.
Up a little bit.
Mike. On the sanitary sewer, making provision for the future sanitary sewer when Ames annexes in, we have provided the easement for that to occur. And it's exactly the same thing we did with Chris's subdivision Bella Woods. There's a 30-foot easement alongside the street that if and when Ames were to annex, that's where the sanitary sewer would go in, and the houses were built up at that time. We're doing the same thing here. We're not putting in the pipe because that is an unknown, and it's not necessarily the best thing in the world to have a dry sewer line just sitting there. But we have made provision for putting that in, and in our preliminary plat documents, we've shown how the houses, when they're being serviced by the Advantech septic systems, how that, the way the pipes are going to come out of the house, will then, at the future time, be able to go to the sanitary sewer. So that's all in the drawings there. And as schematic, you know, it's not built on design drawings, but that's how it will work. So, sanitary sewer, there are three houses along 190th. That's what you mentioned there about having access off of an interior road. That was basically their primary concern about those lots, and it's in our minds, it is really just a technicality. The one where we've got the two lots connected, they're going to share a drive, so that, in a sense, is an interior road. But then we have that one lot hanging out there alone, and it's just going to have one drive. And that bothers Ames, but if we were to put a cul-de-sac there and have 12 houses on it coming out at the same spot, then that's fine, because it technically meets the criteria where you've got more traffic dumping out. So that was the big concern. There is the issue that those three lots, even the Pine annexation, they'll probably never be serviced with sanitary sewer. They're just too far. So you'd have the three lots remaining on septic system. But one of their huge concern, as you mentioned, is the Adahidden watershed. And a big concern there is the process that makes its way into the lake and causes algae blooms and all kinds of other headaches. But Jared mentioned too, part of the Ames process here is requiring a phosphorus reduction plan, and what the golf course is doing, and part of the whole mix of this thing with providing this land for development is the golf course putting together the funds to do some major improvements on the golf course. And one of those is a new irrigation system and new turf types. And between the two of those, they're going to reduce the phosphorus to almost nothing. So I think Ames wanted to see, what, a 60%? But when it's all said and done, even with the septic systems, we're going to be more like a 78% phosphorus reduction. So, all right. Bikes on George City Carver, we do have a 10-foot, the city's required that, an 8-foot bike path that runs the whole length of GW Carver. Traffic on the street, like, as Jerry said, that it is zoned, and I suppose a study could be done, but I can tell you with my experience with traffic studies, it's going to show literally nothing with what do we have? 16 of the
35 lot.
Yeah. 17 singles and whatever. Jerry, if you could put the close up of the,
which one?
The area of the golf course. There you go. Andy. What the city is looking at is bringing Stang up through here in the future, and when the Borgmeyer piece annexes in, and that's when it'll get built. So what we're doing is bringing it out this far, and that's providing our access into here. And that Stang Road, the way it's being constructed, just because of the property issues and timing of development, we're proposing on our property to build actually two lanes of Stang, which will ultimately be a three-lane road when the Borgmeyer piece comes in. They'll build the additional lane, and then our north lane becomes a right turn lane. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Can you say that again? I got lost.
We're proposing for our section of Stang here, we're going to build two lanes right here on our property north of the Borgmeyer, because we can't build on theirs. When they come in for development and annexation to Ames, they will be required to build a lane on their side. So from about here out to GW Carver, it's going to be a three-lane road, but that north lane, although it won't be a through lane, it will be a left turn lane, that, or a right turn lane that brings you just up to the north. So.
You're
calling
it Stang.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Ames, not me. Yeah, Stang. Yeah, Stang's down here, runs north-south.
Yeah, it loops south to the south.
And
that's why.
Yeah, and it, I know it is kind of confusing, isn't it? So they've got it anticipating it just coming swinging around here and swinging out to the west, connecting right there at Cannon School. So.
Chris Gardner, Bella Holmes, 204 Ridgewood, Huxley. Just going to add to that, is it Damon, the city?
Yeah.
Damon's the city of Ames road traffic engineer. And I don't want to speak for Damon, obviously I'm not Damon, but I know just in, actually it's over 3 years now, Jerry. 3 years of staff meetings with Ames and several meetings with the county here. The long-range traffic plan is for staying to go up through there. And I know for fact, just speaking with Damon and hearing him speak, they have done significant studies of traffic, and that's part of the reason to have a major collector like Stang would be a major major collector of Stang to reroute traffic and keep some off of GW. So Stang would continue up through and then not be George Lark take relieve some of the pressure off GW.
I'll have to wait and see what the studies are, because that may or may not relieve anything between Camel School Road and Stang, as it loops down around in terms of the Bloomington. It does not do anything for anybody traveling north and south, because as you approach Cameron School Road and the Stang intersection on George Washington Harbor, it's still currently two lanes, currently with no lights out, and currently there is no control. So you have people turning left there, turning left into the church, turning right into the country club. That's where the bulk of the congestion is. Once you get north of 190th, there's little or no turnoff. There's a couple of gravel roads and there's a few residences. But there is a lot of traffic that comes around the curve on George Washington Harbor and then carries on to Camel School Road and into those destinations there, and it's not safe.
Yeah. From my understanding, the Vogtmeyer property, when that would go, would trigger several factors, like potentially street lights and that stuff. It would obviously be just road stop signs currently right now, and would be as well from our extension. But that's my understanding from talking to Damon, but again, I can't speak for him.
And both Dana at the city and your road engineer here, too, have been involved in these meetings and are comfortable with what we're proposing here.
Yeah, Dana and Darren.
Yeah.
Can you tell me where you're going to put, or where somebody's going to put an 8-foot wide bike trail?
Yeah.
I'll show you
what that is.
This white line here. So it's on the other side of the ditch.
On the other side of the ditch.
Yes.
Okay, that would.
Where is that bike trail parking spot?
Well, it's going to run the whole length of GW Carver from Cameron School up to 190th.
Yeah.
The whole half mile.
From Cameron School, not from Ames, not from Bloomington?
Yeah. We're about to see if we're not having it currently.
They
when they be required to when that
yeah
whatever
develop. When they develop, they'll be putting their slate in.
Is there a way to see the map of that piece?
It is, because there's no
perspective on here. So people can do zoom out and find out here. Is there a view
to this?
There we go. So the is it Vogtmeyer?
Vogtmeyer.
Ford
in Vogtmeyer, I think you are
Ford. Gotcha. That's just immediately to south there. And this is Stang right here.
Yeah. Stang comes to have this little game closed in on our side. So Stang will come up and loop off and connect with it here.
So that entire section between the two is the Vogtmeyer?
Correct, yeah, the 440.
Well, 180, but 440
is the. So the extension Cameron to the east would not go all the way.
Right. Yeah. We're constructing it right to where it's probably going to serve. They don't even have that. We don't even have that actually designed yet. It's just schematic and
in their long range plan. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the other things I can speak to too is Jerry mentioned the common space requirement, and he raised a little bit of our social membership. You do get a free social membership with every lot here, with the use of the clubhouse, use of the tennis courts,
use of the pool. And that on our bike path, obviously, in and out season, of course. So, that's why we build and two new ponds that we're building as well. So I feel like our thing is that we see every bit of open space and the best amenities that we could offer, of course, pool, pull out, bike path, so, and internal sidewalk for that as well.
Yeah, and if you need any further discussion of that, the single family lots could be as small as 10,000 square feet if we had a common sewer, but we don't for the half an acre. With a 10,000 square foot lot, it makes some sense to provide perhaps some common open space because of smaller lots, although there's still significant amounts of in people's backyards for that. But here we have lots of a minimum size of 25,000 square feet, so 2.5 times that. And so there's individual lots, there's plenty of open space to be used. And as Chris said, too, there's the golf course is multiple times what's required by that standard, that ordinance. And so that's why we're coming with an alternative compliance request. And now there is a way we could kind of deal with that. But again, we could actually take this triangle and say, give it to this association and say, okay, that's your common open space. But they can use it without doing that. And then the golf course is maintaining it. It's all part of the golf course system. Why pull that out and make the homeowner separately responsible for the maintenance of that?
Yeah, it wasn't a monetary thing. It's not going to cost you more money than to have that be or not to be part of the association. It's just really a maintenance thing that the club would maintain the maintenance of that pond versus the homeowner association. So it's kind of, I won't say competing interest there, but just much more sense than if your golf course is being maintained perfectly and much better, more common sense to have them maintain that pond. So.
I'm just curious how the pin clubs can feel about people living in a bypass home with no common area walking their dogs on the golf course.
Well, the bypass actually does. They do have some.
I don't think that would be a lot. That's kind of my point. There's a requirement for common space. And
the bypass, they are showing some common.
Yeah, a lot of some. None for the people here, and here.
That, yeah, let's go with that.
Okay.
So, I've got a bunch of questions for you. But the first one is, so your alternative compliance on the open space requirement depends on your alternative successful acquisition or another compliance on the septic system or on the common sewer system.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you're saying you're asking for alternative compliance on this provision, and if you get that, then you're basing more alternative compliance on that.
Well,
you have to have bigger lots only because you're asking for alternative compliance on the common wastewater system.
But you have to know we want bigger lots because that's the market that we want to address out there. So even if there was a sanitary sewer installed, we'd probably still be looking at 20,000 square foot lots.
Yeah.
The more state lots.
Next question is, your room membership to the country club. What happens if the country club goes out of business or is sold to another manager and you have a provision for not just the year you buy your or rent your place or buy your place, but the years after?
Correct. We have an agreement that's being drafted currently with the homeowner association and the club itself. I guess we haven't addressed the buy-sell clause yet. Actually, my attorney would do that. But we have an agreement that regardless of transfer or sale, I mean, it tied to the lot, not the homeowner itself, not the Joe Blow that lives there. I mean, it's tied to the lot itself, so it's a book too.
And what
belongs to
the interior street?
This one, I do not recall.
I think our maximum is like 1,200. It's like 800 or 900.
I don't know.
You're talking about the single family?
No, it's about 6,000.
The smaller ones to the north?
The single family cold tax is probably around 600, 650. Fire attached private drives are less than that. And they don't have a turnaround or a cul-de-sac bulb at the end of them, but what they do have is a hammerhead type turnaround that was requested by the fire department that works well for them.
Yeah, there's one here.
Yeah.
The city names gave us a schematic and said, yeah, this is what they wanted, and the gas mics have got hammerheads, so we just need to get us requirements for that.
Yes. So I'm asking the street length on a hammerhead at 300 feet to satisfy that requirement. Is it more than 300 feet to the first hammerhead going north?
To the first hammerhead? I think so would.
Yeah,
we can verify
that. I don't know off the top of my head, but the hammerhead, it just depends on how where you would measure it from, but this one definitely needs more than 2 minutes.
Okay, so I don't see how that satisfies our street design regulations. Our regulations require for private streets too, and my next question is, how are we allowing private streets here? Our regulations say private streets are permitted to provide a third or fewer lots, only in subdivisions, not more than 4 lots.
And part of it is, I think, a definition, because they're referring to them as drives. Well, before this came to the Planning and Zoning Commission, they came to the Board of Supervisors to get some input about the project in general and got some feedback from the Board of Supervisors to get some direction on, you know, what was being proposed and how it fit in with the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. And kind of the consensus from that meeting was that with regard to this location, with regard to this project, that there should be a focus on, you know, I understand we have our own regulations, but that we...
I think you should amend with that.
Okay.
The Board of Supervisors are already...
This was...
There's
no agreement. This is just... it was just discussion.
Right. I think
it was discussion.
If you have to turn over to the Board of Supervisors before coming here, is your right?
Why are we here?
Because they have the right to go to the Board of Supervisors and select input, request input,
which is what they did.
Yeah,
the Board of Supervisors appointed us to do this, Jerry.
Well, they certainly can.
It was a discussion item.
I'm
just trying to fill in the blanks, but...
Yeah, I guess we're asking for a lot of alternative compliance here, and you didn't even address what alternative compliance is supposed to be. So far, alternative compliance looks like their justification for alternative compliance is we don't like the regulations. And there's other things that just clearly aren't met, and they haven't asked for alternative compliance. So I'm breaking my own rule here, so I'm not really asking you a question. But those would be my concerns, that I don't see how this all gels with our regulations. I'd love to see the proposed amendment to our regulations if that's what needs to happen, but maybe I'm missing something.
Well, my impression is that this is coming to us as either the these are the allowances against the city of Ames requirement, assuming that at some point it's going to be annexed with that plan.
Sure.
Without, and that's fine. If it's already annexed,
then you don't come here and there's no discussion about what the county requirements are versus the city requirements are in the urban fringe plan and things like that. The point is that it's designated as growth area for the city of Ames, and that agreement says that it needs to be agreed upon by Gilbert, Ames, and the county, which at some point it needs to address that combination of regulations. And it looks like it's been negotiated for allowance in the city of Ames based on what the future city of Ames regulations are going to annex. And then there's been already discussions about what the Board of Supervisors would allow, and there's no action to this discussion.
Yeah. I understand it's a tough fight, and you've been working for years to make something happen here. And, I mean, part of the reason for the alternative component section, which is on page 70 of your zoning code, your development regulations, in case you're interested, is to allow innovative proposals. And, they don't quite fit the mold. And, I'm all for that. But right now, we have some few major street provisions that just simply aren't met, and no request for alternative components has even been made. I don't see how you say a private drive and not a private street. I mean, we're changing words there.
But there's a lot different than the parking lot putting the club out. I mean, those drives, if you're still owning those lots, it's a very common approach to townhomes and cash products. All of those things, all of them.
Sure. The difference is, though, that's not serving multiple residential lots. It's serving one business.
Well,
sure.
But
it is an approach that has not been allowed in Story County since the zoning code was adopted. So, we're behind the times in amendments that the zoning code needs to be made, the subdivision regulations need to be made, so we should hear that amendment, but it should be in the context of approving a subdivision, in my opinion.
The fire department said, yes, the Gilbert, Franklin, fire and rescue may have, may feel the same way they do, but you should realize the fire department is not going to serve this area until it's in it.
And even then, that area is outside of the city of Ames regulations for emergency response.
It's not within the
limits.
Yeah. The other thing that Ames has to deal with the commission.
Do we have other specific questions for the applicant?
I would like to know a little more about the tree road.
Just wondered about trees. The Status Commission says that the number of trees are going to be lost, and that it didn't make it seem certain that we would replace them, but I understand that is
there are trees.
The guidance. So can you talk about trees?
Yeah, there's trees going to be impacted. A lot of them are on the side.
I'm sorry,
movable side.
Okay.
We want to keep as many as we want, obviously, and particularly, like the ether and the other, including the trees that are here. Anything that's a removable size, can you see them and probably line them up the line that they're over here? And where we can, of course, bump them up in these common areas as well. So, yes, trees can be impacted if we want to do that stuff.
I mean, with other applications that we've discussed here today, we talked about trees being lost and added, and we had specific numbers in mind. So that part of I think maybe that should be part of it.
Yeah, they do have a landscape plan.
There's an extra landscape buffer.
go all the way along that bypass and then
Yeah, most of it probably, when you say Bob on this north end, there's a grove of trees in here, and that's where the road drives in. You can kind of see kind of in this area.
Here's my question. Back to the three lots on 190th, I think I'm noticing, the zoning here is R2, is that correct?
Correct.
Why, I'm just curious why two right next to each other and then one over there.
It has, this has not gone to the Ames City Council yet.
Okay,
so the
process
is Ames, R&Z, their City Council, all okay. Those submit.
So what happens if we can? Hey, we like it. It's okay. The ACNZ said, no. So where's this conflict? It's settled.
correct me if I'm wrong, Judge, ultimately, both decision-making bodies for both jurisdictions have to agree to that. That's uncompromised.
Technically, all three. That would be clear.
Yeah, technically, the other two, unless they waive their part. So, it's such a spot. You have to try to make everybody happy as a result.
Yeah, I'm not concerned about them going, you know, getting some advice from the board of supervisors. That doesn't concern me whatsoever. You know, because you go wherever you won't be safe. You go wherever you can, you look at whatever it is that you can.
Any other comments or questions? Or would anyone like to take some action?
No one's situation.
I think my comment is looking at this plan, I can see and understand the development and how it fits along toward Washington Harbor. And I don't like the three lot on 190. It doesn't fit with the plan. And I understand it's making use of the space that's available there, and you could fit three lots there. But from just a future and a compliance issue, it's going to be annexed. It's going to be in the city, and it's never going to have city services, right? It's going to always be on sewer and rural water.
On-site septic for the three lots.
I'm sorry, not sewer, yes. It's going to always be on on-site septic. It's never going to have sewer.
That's so like on oil.
Once they're annexed, the current septic, they will transition to city services.
But not the three north ones?
But not the three north ones. My biggest concerns are the model for the compliance that's being asked about some obvious benefits of innovative design here. And the street regulations that simply aren't met. Principle among those that we don't allow private streets for the matching lot. And we need to clear private streets.
So what's our board decision? What's our alternative? I'm sorry.
Jerry, what are our proposals?
One is to approve it. Two is to approve it with staff conditions, three is to deny it, and four is to remand it back.
Keep going.
So one is to approve it as submitted, two is to approve it with conditions suggested by staff, three is to deny it, and four is to table it and remand it back for further.
Could you quickly review the number two? In terms of what the staff recommendation was?
Sure. The open space issue, our requirement is that the subdivision is supposed to provide for 15% of the development for open space.
Okay.
And it's supposed to be dedicated solely to the benefit of the people who reside in the development. And so it's space that you can use for it, you know, for whatever legal purpose you choose to do. Their point is that we have a golf course right next to us, and that's providing more than the 15%. And it's, you know, if you participate in golfing, then you've got an activity.
You can maybe be unhappy if you watch your dog golf.
I would think so. And plus, you're going to be in the way of golfing.
Well,
it's
not
inclusive.
And what else?
The second thing was easements. They're showing like utilities on these lots, but they didn't look like a defined easement, which is something that we require. But I've had comments or contact with Bob, and that's something that they're going to address on the drawing. Going forward, they'll show easements.
What else?
That's it.
Could you go back to the Ames plan you're going recommended?
Ames?
I'm wondering if it was more than what these conditions
were. Yeah. It's on the board there.
So those have been addressed in the drawing, in the revised?
Have all of them been addressed?
Other than the removal of the three lots on the
for the senior water supply house?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Correct. We have a 5,000 square foot
I was looking at the county ordinances now about presenting natural vegetation, and it talks about not removing more than 15% resources.
That's already been done with the golf course probably back in the 70s. I don't know what the land use of the golf course.
I mean, we're talking about a new development in whatever it is now. And that's why, is it true then that if more than 50% is removed, then there should be a mitigation or planting measure. And so, I guess again, I'm just asking, can you be more specific about what you're taking out and what you're replacing? And
there's a plan, I'm sorry, I don't have that.
You're going to plant and enhance planting, but, you know, how will it balance out?
Well, normally, on a couple of things, it's not natural landscape, it's all these things that we're working on. And you're facing the size of the trees, and it's not like it's natural movement that is being observed. Another way to look at it, and if we don't be adding this entire 160 acres, that's part of the subject. All sorts of things are not possible. So, the big thing that is, maybe it's kind of a small issue here.
Right here where the trees are, that they're going to get, some of those are going to get removed, and they've got a landscape plan, but they're going to have a lot more trees in there, and that's on me. I didn't put it in my presentation. They have a landscape plan, and they're showing like where the new road is. They've got trees for that area, and then the biotech area, they've got trees planned.
Okay. So the trees that have been removed to the sound of the country club so far, are those for this development, or is that something you can do?
What is the process by which to come to an agreement with any builders in the county? In other words, what I'm thinking is, if we did a conditional based on what the staff recommends, plus that they remove those three lots, doesn't that solve the issue?
I would suggest that we have. My opinion is that we have more issues than just that. Also, we're just recommending body, and the AIM Planning Commission is just recommending body, so if you go to Board Supervisors and City Council, just as a proposed step tonight, and there could be a little conflict.
Okay.
I don't think our big issue is making an agreement with the City of Ames right now.
Oh, okay.
That's my thought.
And let's look after that road drive issue. Yeah. I don't have a piece of time.
I'm going to go to the chapter.
Should I be looking at development regulation? Should I be looking for development regulation?
Yeah.
seems like so many commission members don't have a current hard copy. And I'm having a hard time finding
it. Probably a fresh copy, probably the land development regulation.
All right.
Yes, yeah.
And I'll get it on the website, too.
There you go. Okay.
For the sake of moving along here, I'm going to make a motion to accept staff number 2 recommendation. Just a second. Motion fails for lack of a second. Do you have another motion?
You know what? What other conditions did you have in mind? Did you say it was more than just the one issue? More than just the 3 lots?
In my mind, I don't think that it can be addressed with tax and on one condition.
Okay. Then I would move to revise Jerry's motion.
Can't do that.
I'll make a motion with step number 2. What's the condition?
That was a motion that just...
That was Jerry's motion.
...that defeated or failed the lack of a second.
Okay, so it's failed, so I'm going to sign it. Okay, so what do we do? You can't do that?
No, I'll make it. Yeah, you can make it.
Well, then help me word it.
I just reminded you.
Help me word it, then. Okay, I'm making a motion that we move forward with it as it is, provided the... Provided the conditions of
the providing open space.
Open space.
And the cul-de-sac, and then provide showing the utilities
on the space. Okay, so we got the open space and the easement regarding utilities.
Are there any problems with the rules of order on the
machine? Yes.
I'll make a redundant motion.
That's the same.
I don't believe so. So we have a motion. I think we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Jerry, you can second it. I'm just saying, I have a question.
Yeah.
The order. Is that what I just made a motion on?
Yeah. It is.
That
one's
second.
Okay. We have a motion by Miller and a second by Gable. I will call it, please.
Miller.
Yes.
Farnwell.
Abstain.
Steele.
No.
Smith.
No.
Cable.
Yes.
Merkin.
No.
Okay. Motion failed. So I can make another law.
No, sure thing.
That's what I have to do with the chair.
Can you wait why you decided no?
I'm waiting to see here if we
left. You had another couple of notes and we had that discussion as to why you didn't.
I would move. Hold on for a second. Let's see if we can get a motion.
I would move that we table action on this pending the applicant addressing the issues in the county development ordinance. I have a feeling there's probably more than just the trees and drive, so I don't want to limit myself to that, so I'm not that familiar with it yet.
I think that all the motion we need, but certainly.
Is
number 4 a correct summary of your motion?
Yeah. I hope. Because the intent is not in there, but let's go with it.
I
think your intent is to remand it so that they can write to the applicant and or staff for further review and or modifications, right?
Yeah.
So they've all been present for all of the conversations that have happened.
Yeah.
So is that your motion?
Yeah.
Yes. Can the commission provide some guidance, though, as far as what we're supposed to be looking at?
We have a motion.
Yeah, we have a motion.
We have a motion.
A motion by Merkin and a second by Smith. Is there any discussion about the motion?
To address Jerry's question, I think maybe we need more specific about further review of what. For instance, the street ordinance in the city, perhaps.
I think just as a point of order, I think we can give that direction outside of the motion.
Okay.
And first, I didn't want to limit my motion to the streets and drives because I'm not yet that familiar with our development regulations, and I don't want to leave anything out that they should look at, should address if they haven't.
I think that this is the direction that we need, that the applicant would be wise to review our regulations beyond what we need to discuss, just to make sure.
Yes,
thank you. Okay, we have a motion in a second. We will call it.
Steele.
Yes.
Barnwell.
Yes.
Merkin.
Yes.
Miller.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Cable.
No.
Motion carried. Do we retain that until next month or until we have additional information to consider? All right. Can we find the break?
Yes.
We will meet that for 5 minutes.
Is there any vote that we have to do?
Make a recommendation.
So I've got to vote.
Call me back order. consideration of the adoption of the CCC plan. We went over it with the consultants last time we were here, and the hope is that we will recommend a recommend.
We can do the CAPO appointment first before we get to the comp plan.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Can we do that first?
All right. Yeah, we can do that. I got out of order. We need to appoint the planning and zoning commission over to the combined animal feeding operation county committee, which you'll have to explain.
Yeah, I'll try to do my best. Nancy Collier was appointed to that position. The county department, the county has a committee set up for when these applications get submitted to the state. We have the authority to pass a resolution, which the Board of Supervisors have done, to allow the county to review these applications, to provide input into them. And we gave you a couple of handouts. One deals with the master matrix process. The other one deals with the scoring, which is specifically what our committee does. We've got members from the Conservation Commission, Planning Commission, auditors, assessors, environmental health. We're looking for a member that serves on the Planning and Zoning Commission, preferably somebody with an ag or farming background. Again, it's a point system. The applicants can choose what items they want scored. And basically what we're doing is looking at the applications. We have a submittal that was made in Northeast Story County. There was like an 80-some page submittal. And Margaret Jange, who's the Director of Environmental Health, is kind of our coordinator for our committee. And she decides who should be the primary reviewer for the various questions that are on these applications. Planning and Development had, a handful of them. The Planning and Zoning Commission member has a couple of those. Just to give you an example, there's a comment here about installation of filters. Let's see, there's one dealing with aerated manure storage structure, manure incorporation. So, again, this is like a weighted system. We have the authority to review these. We provide input. We decide whether or not the points that the applicant's giving themselves are accurate. If we disagree, we provide that information. Ultimately, it involves a public hearing at the county level, action by the Board of Supervisors, and then these documents are submitted to the DNR for review, who have the ultimate authority to approve or deny or you know, require conditions and so forth. So we're asking for somebody that sits on the Planning and Zoning Commission to serve at our countywide committee to help us review these applications when they come in.
And this committee meets locally?
Here in this building.
And this committee meets only when there's an application submitted?
Only when there's one submitted.
Which could be 30, could be 1, could be 0?
It could be, you know, I've been here since August. We've received 1 since I've been here. So I've been here 3/4 of the year.
Okay. And do you have any history on how often these things come up? Sorry, I just have a sense that that's the way on anyone who's involved here.
In my time in planning development world, I think I scored 2 or 3 individually, so that was over a course of 15 years.
For about less than 1 year.
Well, a couple of years ago we had like 2 or 3 in 1 year. So it is a, it can be cyclical, and it can be an extension of what the market is doing too. But there's not a clear, every year you can expect 1, you can expect 4.
So, some of the things that I've been IT from Southern California,
I will pull myself out of the.
We're reviewing
round 1
right now.
One part of
expansion.
I think somebody with a background in science and somebody with a compliance review might be really a good person.
A good person.
Yeah, not just somebody who lives on a farm.
When
did
that happen?
Know that
where I came from.
Yeah. Well, he's in
our price,
so the point person is not here.
You
can
do that too, that's fair game.
Okay.
Or would you even consider it
and
give that to us?
Let me
consider
it and give that to you. I'm
going
to check at home.
Okay. So you want to table it for next month? Is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah, you get some thought. Yeah. Okay. We'll get back to you on that one. Okay, let's get to the consideration of the adoption of the PVC plan. We reviewed this in detail last time. Hopefully you have had a chance to take a look at the final revision online. Can you focus what we'd like to tell us about it? Clearly on Chris and Chris and me.
I'm just going to kick it off because I am the history, as everyone seems to point out to me, a story county lately. We really kicked this off. Let me start by telling you thank you for being here tonight. I know you're required to, but you do take your you take your time, and as a professional planner, that's very nice and refreshing to see. But this whole process started, we'd like to say, 18 months ago when we released an RFP, selected this outstanding team of consultants. It was actually a few years before that when the county brought in pro bono planning team from the American Planning Association, so our CPAT, Community Planning Assistance Team. If you've not had a chance to go back and read that, do it. I'll get you a copy. We've actually realized a lot of the recommendations that came out of that, and this was a fundamental recommendation to develop a coordinated long-range plan for Story County. We have a long history of planning dating back to 1977, even beyond that to 1957. And CPAT team recognized that, but said you need to do a better job, make it comprehensive, and that's where you are tonight. I just want, it's an exciting time. I am such a planning geek. I get reminded of that constantly, but I think for looking forward to the future of Story County next 20 or 30 years, this is what's needed. This is the next logical step for Story County to take. And I just want to just quickly say, Cornerstone to Capstone was not just a fly-by-night title we came up with. It was very specific in choosing that title. Cornerstone, dating back to 1950s heritage, and the capstone is everything that we've been doing so successfully at this point, and the setting stage continue getting stronger for all Story County. Again, thank you to the consulting team. And I also want to say thank you to members of the C2C Task Force who did put much long hours in, reviewing documents, giving feedback, and then the C2C project team as well. One quick thing for you guys to frame your discussion, then I'll turn over to these guys. When you met last in your work session format, the question of implementation was. Since then, we've had some time to formalize what that will look like. In June, it'll be in 100% internally driven. It will be staff driven. Consultants, once the C2C plan is adopted, get a walk away. The implementation will be driven by staff. In June and July, we'll bring the C2C project team together for a couple more times. Develop what will be called the C2C implementation matrix, and it'll have an action plan component and matrices to it. That'll be staff developed, formulated everything, but then that will come to the Planning and Zoning Commission, Board of Supervisors, and the Story County Conservation Board. Similar to how the whole kickoff to the project was 18 months ago in a joint work session in early September. Don't have that date set yet, but that will be hopefully in here. That'll be reviewed, and then later part of September, that will go to the Board of Supervisors for their approval. What that will do is that then sets the stage, it'll have a schedule, that sets the stage for the capital improvement planning that we do. We kick off then in October, the annual budgeting that Story County does, and then taking a good hard look, we try to every year on that strategic plan that's on the wall up there that the board has adopted. So I wanted you to know that it's not a piece that you've seen yet tonight, nor will you. We know that it's a very important piece that it's yet to come. If you have any questions for me, can you see me before and then you're going to go away and not come back ever again? Except for September.
Yeah. You left us on a good note there because I wanted to clarify. So that once the plan is adopted, there are at least three more steps in the plan before any new regulation or three more steps in the process before any new regulation or spending might result. So changes in the plan doesn't commit the time of spending money on any particular activity. I mean, you've got the implementation plan and the capital improvement plan and then the actual budget where the rubber meets the road or actual spend.
Yes. With some exceptions. The strategic plan language is built into the natural resources chapter. That's already been adopted by the Story County Board of Supervisors. Projects are listed on our strategic plan are already, in some cases, in the budget, like the research park, items like that. So, yeah, I mean, the new projects all come out of it. That's where the harder decision will have to come.
So when there's language in the plan, it's going to be involved together. When there's language in the plan, it tends to happen all through it. Promote this, enhance this, guide this. Those things aren't intended to direct you toward a particular implementation mechanism necessarily. When it says promote something, we shouldn't interpret that to mean spend money on this project.
Right.
Necessarily.
So, Dave, you were standing up. Do you want to answer that more beyond than just right?
No.
I'm done.
I agree with her answer, but I would also say that Chris Stanton with MSA Professional Services, consultant for the C2C plan, and Chris Shires with Council consultant for the C2C plan. It doesn't commit you to anything, but it does provide
backup should the county, you guys, board of supervisors, department heads, anybody choose to say, okay, this is a priority for us and we want to move forward with it. They can look back at the plan and say, great, we have public input that got put into these goals, that put into strategies that back up this thing that I want to do. That is where it doesn't say you have to do this, but it does allow for that, you know, thought process to go forward towards enacting something. But yeah, I don't think, aside from what Leanne said about the conservation and natural resources and recreation, there isn't anything in this part of the plan that you're looking at tonight without the implementation section that basically says, yep, we're doing this and going forward with it. It is very much along the lines of a guide or a backup.
Yeah, we use a lot of shoulds rather than shall language. So should consider, you know, promote, endeavor to. And so even in your deliberation on a rezoning or even a subdivision, you know, it's giving you some, boy, it needs to consider this, it should have this in there, gosh, does it cover this, and gives you those justifications for your recommendation on approval or recommendation on denial.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the question kind of alluding to what does it require or not in terms of shall.
Mm-hmm.
What about constrained and against on the other side of the coin? Does it serve to as a constraint against things that people may propose that are not in line with it?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So again, it doesn't have the shall not statements in there. But it says, we need to do provide adequate public facilities. You know, is there adequate, fire protection for that intensity of development? Or is its location appropriate for future, you know, impact to the adjoining city? And so it can help them justify a finding of recommendation of denial that, boy, that subdivision isn't appropriate, or that more directly, that rezoning isn't appropriate because, you know what, nobody's going to be able to provide sanitary sewer service to it. Boy, that's a lot to try to put on a septic system, you know, something like that, for example. Doesn't say the answer is no, but it gives you some justifications when you do make a recommendation for no.
So I see that as a resource for guiding whatever recommendations may come here that, you know, are opposed to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another question is about amending it. Is there part of the plan to revisit it? That's probably in the plan, I just don't remember.
That would be part of the implementation section. Okay. And if I was
We didn't put that in. We
did
talk about that last meeting.
That'll be in the implementation session, but that prior to budgeting, prior to strategic planning, those types of things, that it get reviewed to make sure that, you know, the priorities are still there, or there doesn't need to be additional goals, you know, situations change. The other thing is it can be amended by the general public. They may request an amendment, especially if you have somebody come in and request a rezoning that doesn't fit the future land use plan. Not only will they have to request that rezoning as they normally do, but they may request an amendment to the future land use plan of this document, and then you go through that process. And the great thing about a comprehensive plan is you're not just looking at, okay, what are the colors on the map? You know, like, what do I want this to be blue or do I want it to stay white? No, you can look and say, okay, does this meet some of our infrastructure goals? Does it meet our cultural goals? Does it, you know, protect agricultural resources? Or is it okay to go ahead with this because it meets some of the goals of the economic prosperity? It can be used not only by you, the board of supervisors, the department heads, the county, anybody. It also can be used by the public and petitioners that come forward. They could use this as a document to say, no, I'm coming to you with this proposal that meets these three goals, and here's how I think it meets those. Then you have that discussion. It's not, it's a plan for the community. When I say the community, the county, the unincorporated areas as a whole, not just Surrey County government.
And one more question, sorry, is the urban fringe, which has been incorporated,
part
radio, how does this you know, interplay with that. I mean, there's an infringed plan, which is all written out and agreed upon by the various, you know, governing bodies. May or may not line up well with this, depending on where you're talking. Transportation, roads, natural conservation, and so on. So, is there any plan to go back and revisit that, vis-a-vis the adoption of this?
You know,
maybe you don't know the answer to that.
I think probably, you know, Jerry, you might need to answer that one on the plans on, you know, ever relooking or with the periodic review of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. But from its form, this plan fully acknowledges it and defers to the what's in place on the existing Ames Urban Fringe Plan. And so, and in whatever form it might be.
By reference.
That, right. And so we didn't try to re-adopt it or cut and paste everything from it and throw back in, realizing that plan definitely is going to evolve and change over time. Absolutely. And I'm assuming it'll get periodically re-reviewed. What we also tried to do, though, is make sure we didn't have outright conflicts with it. And I don't think we have any, but should, you know, they appear over time, you know, that might be something that would need to be revisited or amended in the comprehensive plan or the Ames Urban Fringe Plan.
So the CPC could serve as a guide in that process, perhaps?
I mean, at least from the maybe the county's perspective, and hence the city of Ames and, itself was involved in this process, hopefully it does kind of serve as a base framework, a starting point. Hey, we have this hopefully common set of goals. Are those reflected in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan? And I know what you just went through on that was a little bit painful, and those multiple jurisdictional extraterritorial reviews are not fun. They're just not fun. There's a lot of it. But that was so much heavy lifting and good work was done originally with that Ames Urban Fringe Plan that we just didn't think we wanted to try to hurt it or diminish it in this conference plan.
And so our recommendations. One comment
for Carla, because I don't know, because you're new here, is that on the work list for the planning and training staff, when we reviewed with them, here are the things that they're going to work on this year. One of the items on the work list was to evaluate and look at which section
number two might include.
You know, that book that Aaron was referencing and we were looking at online, which sections of that need to be revised and revisited using this, the CDC plan as a framework, right? So where there are sections that need to be revised or are dated, let's look at what we received as the plan and the public input and try and align our revised code with that.
Okay. Any other questions? Thanks, guys. Yeah. Any members of the public would like to comment on this? We would like to say one more thing, just that I don't know if this is the right time, but it has been an absolute pleasure working with you folks and with Jerry and Leanne and the rest of the staff. So we really appreciate this opportunity. We really appreciate being able to put this together for you and look forward to the next step in this, which is hopefully a board adjustment workshop in here this month, I think 17th, that sounds good.
The board of supervisors.
Board of supervisors on the 10th.
So it'll work out like
May 17th.
Yep. And then, is it the 17th?
May 17th from 1 to 2:30.
Okay.
Review by board supervisors and then hearing June 7th at 10 p.m.
A.m.
Okay.
We may run at 10 p.m.
We may, you never know.
And just one point in total respect for the man telling us that once this is done, the consultant's kind of going away. we do, you know, value long-term relationships, and so we do hope that you can see us again and that we can be involved in the future. You know, the biggest hope we have is that this plan is a very, very useful tool to you, and that you use it, move it around, modify it, and that it actually has meaningful impact. Nothing will make us happy. And so that's kind of
you know, we do see it as a long-term deal for us as well.
Yeah, Leanne mentioned being a planning nerd. We as planning nerds don't want this to be a self-plan.
Yeah, and I think you're on the right path for that, especially with how much involvement the appointing elected officials have in this as well.
Very hard any questions for staff and other comments? Any action if you'd like to vote?
I'll make a motion that we get,
we would act to recommend to the Board of Supervisors some course of action.
So I'll make a motion to recommend to the Board of Supervisors the interview and adopt the CDC plan as presented.
Okay. Motion is second.
Motion
by Smith, second by Darnwell. And if you're a roll call vote, please.
Merkin.
Yes.
Engel.
Yes.
Smith.
Yes.
Steele.
Yes.
Darnwell.
Yes.
I knew that that would be the shortest item of business.
Who suggests that would be the fastest thing you did tonight?
All right.
We are hiring an intern. She starts on the 9th, which we're real excited about. She's a grad student in planning at Iowa State. And then we have a planner starting on the 16th, the following Monday. So we're very, very happy to be at full staff in 2 weeks.
I have one closing comment.
We do. Any other
comments? The Board of Supervisors did acknowledge Mr. Wendt's decision to resign from the Planning and Zoning Commission, so we are working to fill that position. I just want to say, as a staff person, your position and your role is greatly appreciated. We can't do our work without the work that you guys do, so thank you very much for that.
Thanks.
Okay. So, just so that it's on the record, I was thinking more about the previous item of the items, the development. And the thought came to me in 10 years when, all of that surrounding area is developed with annexed development. What will that development look like in comparison, right? With the private drives and the three standalone lots on 190th, and how will it reflect in the future when there's regular development surrounding it? And I think that's the direction, and that's my hesitation toward that, which is, you're going to end up with an entrance to a country club as your street, right? You're going to end up with three standalone houses on lots with entries onto a busy 190th, because everything north and south of that will be developed with houses. And my concern is that we're moving ahead with this as a pre-annexed Ames, and we're having all these allowances and all of these things, special conditions, that I don't know why we would do that.
We're not going to cut you off.
Yeah.
Since that's still an open case, I think I should discuss this with the schedule on the agenda. But
okay.
Excellent admonishment that for everything we do, which is we're supposed to think beyond how far other people think. We're supposed to think what that will look like when a golf course changes hands and goes out of business and is sold as well. And I think that is our job.
And then we happen to be golf course on 190th at 59, so we've got to think about when it does happen.
Yeah. Other comments from the commission? All right. So motion to adjourn.
I know.
Stand adjourned. Thanks, everybody.